OPEC delegates are saying their oil production cuts will stay in place for another 9 months. I'm David Brancaccio with the Marketplace Midday Update. The oil producers cartel OPEC is meeting in Vienna today ahead of an official announcement. News agencies citing unnamed sources say production cuts will stretch into next winter. That is the decision. This morning, benchmark crude in New York was down about 0.6%, hovering near $51 a barrel. A veteran of many of these OPEC meetings is the BBC's economics correspondent Andrew Walker.
The price now is no higher than it was when OPEC and a group of non-member countries made the agreement back in December. So I certainly think it's true to say that OPEC regards what's been happening to oil prices as a bit disappointing. And in particular, what they really want to do is to make some sort of impact on the very high levels of stocks of crude oil that are held around the world.
Essentially, this glut. Now, the United States, from OPEC's point of view, is not helping. You know, we're producing quite a bit of oil from our shale formations.
Yes, indeed. And the problem that OPEC has is that anything it does by way of cutting production creates more room in the marketplace for U.S. shale to step in and fill a gap. And of course, any success they might have in getting prices a bit higher, to the extent that they can manage that, does simply make shale oil production more profitable. And we've had a number of occasions where we've actually seen, frankly, the American shale oil industry has been rather more resilient in the face of lower prices than I think the Saudis and others in OPEC hoped they would be.
The BBC's economics correspondent Andrew Walker in London. Thank you.
My pleasure, David.
Policymakers are still digesting the Congressional Budget Office report from yesterday on the health care bill passed in the House of Representatives, headed to the Senate. It projects an additional 23 million people would be uninsured under that bill compared to the Affordable Care Act, Obamacare. And it also projects what the insurance market might look like in states that opt for one of the bill's key provisions. States can apply for waivers from federal rules requiring insurers to cover essential health benefits in patients with pre-existing conditions. Marketplace's Mariel Segarra has more.
The Congressional Budget Office estimates that about half the U.S. population lives in a state that would try to get a waiver from these federal rules. Insurers in those states would be able, for example, to charge people more if they had pre-existing conditions like diabetes and heart failure. Elizabeth Carpenter from Avalere Health says in those states,
people who are healthy may see lower premiums. People who have significant health needs may see much higher premiums.
Like a lot higher, despite built-in subsidies. The CBO gives an example of a 64-year-old man who makes $27,000 a year. He'd have to spend half that on premiums.
In general, yeah, it's hard to imagine that someone could pay that share of their income toward health insurance.
Christine Eibner from the RAND Corporation says that means people with chronic conditions could get priced out of the insurance market. The flip side of all this? Younger, healthier people may be more likely to buy insurance because it's not going to cost them that much. I'm Mariel Segarra for Marketplace.
If your financial awareness was formed in the 1980s and 1990s, you may have learned to expect too much out of the stock market. There was a long Reagan-Bush-Clinton-era run that led people to believe that the stock market had almost magical powers. Marketplace contributor and Washington Post columnist Alan Sloan ordered up some research into this, starting on data for the year 1982.
In August, the stock market started going nuts in the good sense, and so did the bond market. And suddenly, the biggest bull market of all time was upon us, and it lasted almost 18 years.
Yeah, there was a moment in 1987 that wiped the smile off some folks' face. But I get your point, right? It really stretched into the new millennium. But if you look at our present era, it's not quite the same, is it?
No. And in the boom, stocks returned almost 20% a year, which meant every 3.5 years you doubled your money. Wow. And bonds returned about 10%, which for bonds was huge. Since then, according to my friends at AJO, a Philadelphia firm, stocks have returned less than 5, and bonds have returned slightly more than 5, which means it's taking now 15 years to double your money in stocks instead of 3.5. And it's taking much longer to double your money in bonds as well.
That has wide implications. I mean, for my family's bottom line, your family's bottom line, but I guess for policymakers as well.
Well, sure. You see now all of these pension funds doing desperate things with computers and hedge funds because they're trying to make enough money to satisfy the assumptions that they'll make 7 or 8% a year, which used to be easy, and now it's extremely difficult. And that's a big factor in the whole retirement crisis.
But also the notion that if we haven't put in enough, we can't just expect the market's going to fix this.
If you look at places like New Jersey, where you and I both live, and Illinois and other states and cities, they used to be in great shape in the public pension funds because the markets were so strong. So they cut back the contributions because they were doing great. And then when the markets turned, they kept waiting for the return of the magic market. And we're now waiting in our 18th or 19th year. And somehow, David, I don't think it's going to happen.
Yeah, it's a big public policy question. Washington Post columnist Alan Sloan is also editor-at-large at ProPublica. Thank you.
My pleasure, David.
While Alan there points out 1982 is the start of that long stock market boom, it sure didn't feel like it at the time. 82 is the year I entered the workforce in the face of the cold wind of the Reagan-era recession, and the benchmark interest rate, the Fed funds rate, was running at 15% after coming off a peak of 20% the year before. The Fed funds rate these days is less than 1%. In New York, I'm David Brancaccio with the Marketplace Midday Update. From APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.